Mini episode 356 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 356. FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Kyle Ross coming at you again to break down NFL Week 15. Looking back at last week on how we did, I was 8-8 on all my picks, 2-1 on my big three, 1-0 on my lock pick, bringing me to 99-109 for the season on all of them. Strangely enough, doing better on all of the games than on the select ones. 18-23-1 on my big three, now 5-8-1 on my lock picks. Kyle, a tremendous 2-1 last week, bringing him back within a game of 500 after being well below it, so it will be a profitable year when it's all said and done. I should clarify also, too, the Kyle Ross we're speaking of, FDH Lounge dignitary, longtime Vegas handicapping legend, not the first Kyle Ross that comes up when you YouTube search for him. I've been tagging the videos Kyle Ross on there. Apparently somebody else comes up first, Kyle. That's very unfortunate.
You stole my thunder. I had a nice joke planned for the end of the show after you told me that.
Go ahead.
I wanted to clarify to the world that I, in fact, was not a gay porn star. I had a bit of an identity crisis the last 7 days here. And I've, if I want a backdoor cover, yeesh. I mean, hello. That's
awesome.
That's something. I mean, no, different person altogether. So, that was a funny story you told me there. It's amazing. So.
I couldn't believe when I found that. That was very unfortunate. But what's been very fortunate has been your recent record here in the handicap.
There's anything wrong with that, by the way.
That's for a segue. Yeah. Well, you're not that progressive, Kyle, that you're down with that. But your picks have been very good thus far. One doesn't have to be a tolerant individual to concede that your picks have been very, very good. This is an interesting week. I know you wanted to kind of set the table at the outset here. A disproportionate, almost historic number of road favorites this week. And conversely, some ugly picks where you see an opportunity.
Yeah, first, I mean, I love your, I do appreciate your kind words there. But, hey, we're in the same boat. We're both one game under 500. But I think both of us are certainly feel like we're gaining momentum last 3 weeks here. Both of us have certainly done pretty well. I know I have. I went 2-1 last week after going 3-0 the week before, and then 4-1-1 the week before that. But this week, and I think I texted you this maybe Sunday night, or maybe it was Monday night. Regardless, it was early in the week, I know, when I texted you this. As I saw the lines beginning to come out one by one, and really when you looked at the matchups, you kind of had a feeling it was going to happen anyway, with so many good teams on the road taking on bad teams, that you were just going to see a plethora of road favorites. And that's what we have this week, and this card is really going to be a test of the old sharps v. squares debate. Not that you and I are completely different how we do our handicapping approach, but I, jokingly will call you road favorite Ricky at time for your propensity to take road favorites. I, of course, hate road favorites. So I do anticipate in the next 45 minutes you and I disagreeing on quite a number of these games. And I'll say, from my perspective, I'm just going to go in with a bit of a disclaimer. They hit these home dogs with the ugly stick because it's one of those things where you don't really feel good giving them out, but you got to be confident in the way you handicap. And some of these teams I give out, not saying they're the better team, just saying they might pull a fast one this week. So it's going to be interesting. I could look like the smartest guy in the room or the dumbest guy in the room by about 8 o'clock Sunday night. We shall see.
Well, you have the confidence most of us don't, and I really applaud that on your part. I'll include myself in the most of us don't part as far as giving out the ugly picks, but you have to be willing to do that if you're going to have winners here. The first one that we're starting with here does not have a road favorite. This will not be up in time for the Thursday night game, but as always, you can check out our picks at the FDH Lounge on Twitter. Denver is hosting San Diego in the Thursday nighter. They are a 10-point favorite down from 12 at the open. San Diego played them kind of tough the first time around. Some injuries on both sides here. Keenan Allen for the Chargers, Wes Welker for Denver. I just think this is one where San Diego will kind of sneak in, and it might be too soon to reuse this phrase on the show and hit the back door, but that's what I'm looking for in this one here, the Chargers to get underneath the 10.
Yeah, when you have a dog in a division matchup of this size, you generally want to go with it. And tweet it out, Ricky. I'm recommending one right off the rip here with San Diego. I am one of the few, feels like maybe me and Mike McCoy and Phillip Rivers, maybe the only ones left in the country that still believe in this team and think there is a slight chance that they could find their way into that sixth playoff spot in the AFC that seemingly no one is good enough for. They won for me last week, trashed the Giants at home 37-14. I gave them out a few weeks ago when they went to Kansas City and pulled the upset. I don't think they're going to win this game, truth be told. That's going to drop them to 6-8. They do play at home their last two games, so at 8-8, we should see what happens there. Maybe a tiebreaker works their way, but they did lose to Miami, so they could be in trouble. But I think they're going to be able to trade points with Peyton Manning and that Broncos offense. Denver's defense is not good at all. I know one of Tennessee's four touchdowns last week came on a very short field, but still, this Denver defense hasn't looked good in some time. And I'll tell you what, people are betting the over on this game like a drunken sailor. I'll talk more about totals when we get to the Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game later on. This is one that I might actually stay away from the over, though, because that number has flown up during the week. I think it's all the way to 56 now, which is a little too high for my taste. But, take the points on this one with San Diego. They actually held Denver to a season low in total yardage in the first meeting, 397 yards, if you can believe that.
Yeah, very understandable your reasoning for this. It's kind of the same as mine. I'm looking for like a 38-31 backdoor kind of a situation where San Diego puts up a lot and hangs with them. Getting to the Sunday games here, the first game that we're going to talk about has been getting a lot of attention because of the RG3 circus. The Redskins travel to the Georgia Dome and will face the Atlanta Falcons. And cast lounge guest Sam Rosen on the call for this game, as it happens, 1 o'clock Eastern time on Fox. And the Falcons are laying 7 in this one, up from 4.5 at the open. I'm going to join the stampede of money that's been going on the Falcons here. Of the 2, 3, and 10 teams, one of them is not nearly as bad as their record, hint, beneath the Washington Redskins. Atlanta's showing a little bit more of a pulse in recent weeks here, almost pulling off the upset in the cold weather at Green Bay last week. I like the Falcons in this one more than the 7 that they're laying.
I'm staying away. As you duly noted, the money came in quite early and swiftly on the Falcons in this one, mainly because of that horrific performance Washington turned in last week at home against Kansas City. Their special teams unit setting the sport back many, many years with just one of the worst games played by any individual unit, I believe, in the history of the NFL. I mean, it really was bad how much how Dexter McCluster made their punt return team look, punt coverage team look, I should say. But at the same time, Washington just is not deserving of my money or your money right now. I will say this with the Cousins thing. We should make note of that, I guess. I don't totally disagree with it. Who knows why Shanahan's actually doing it, but he actually could be doing the franchise a solid, despite the fact he may not be around to reap the rewards, in that their schedule is kind of weak here at the end, Washington. Not saying that they're going to go on any kind of winning run, but Cousins might be able to put up some good numbers, and thus you can trade him to a stupid team such as maybe, you know, your Cleveland Browns, and get something nice in return, get a decent draft, because remember, Washington will not be drafting high in the first round this year because that pick goes to St. Louis as part of the RG3 trade from a couple years ago.
Very good point. And, yes, Cousins would be a nice consolation prize for teams like my Browns getting shut out of the quarterbacks in the draft next year. The next game here, I have to tell you, you're not going to agree with who I'm picking for the game, but the fact that it is not a recommended pick on my part shows that you are having some impact on my thinking here, because, and I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about here, laying 5 points on the road, it's the 9-4 San Francisco 49ers at the 4-9 Tampa Bay Bucks. I'm on the 49ers in this one, but this is not going to be one of my big three plays because, A, time zone, 49ers coming cross country for this one, and B, the train wreck effect of the week after you play Seattle that you've been kind of impressing on me. I don't see a way that Tampa Bay hangs with San Francisco, even though they've been a little bit hotter recently. They haven't played anybody, or haven't beaten anybody, I should say, nearly as good as San Francisco. And the time they played somebody nearly as good, it was Carolina, and they beat the dog piss out of them. So I don't think Tampa Bay can hang, but this is one of my non-big three picks for San Francisco.
Well, it's funny that this is a home dog that I'm not recommending either, Ricky. So I think we're both a little wishy-washy on this one. The 49ers have done a good job beating up on the bad teams on their schedule. You know, certainly the argument for Tampa Bay, you kind of laid it out there. It's an early start time for a West Coast team and somewhat of a letdown spot after a game they had to have last week at home against Seattle. You know, that said, can you believe Greg Schiano may actually wind up keeping his job after all that?
Hard to believe.
I mean, there's a chance, I guess, isn't there? I mean, they're playing a lot better. You know,
right.
Mike Glennon looks like he's probably going to be the starter next year. So, wow, I mean, that just shocks me. I mean, who would have thought that, you know, even 2 months ago that the Mike Shanahan situation could usurp what was going down in North Florida there. So, yeah, I'm passing here. I kind of like the first half under in this game, by the way, if you'll allow me to get a little exotic on the listeners here. The first half under may be worth a look. Yeah.
Okay. All right, we'll make a note of that one. See how that one turns out. That could be very interesting to see how it goes. Next up here,
the number
20
and a half. I think the number's 20 and a half. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds pretty good, actually, particularly with the caliber in particular of the San Francisco defense. I could really see that being the case. And the fact that offense has been kind of on and off on their part. You could see them kind of balky and maybe settling for field goals early on. That could be a very, very plausible situation, I think. Up next here, a battle of two dome teams and another one of our road favorites that we have. It's the New Orleans Saints. They are laying 6.5 at St. Louis, up from 5.5 previously. And, again, in looking at this one, a little bit of potential, you had alluded to it with San Francisco, certainly the capability of a letdown spot here, the sandwich game between two Carolina Panthers games. They're on the road. They've had some issues sometimes previously at St. Louis. I like the Rams to come in the back door on this one. I'm going to go with the
like
home dog. I don't necessarily think they can win this game, but would it be the most shocking thing in the world? Well, you know, not after the Rams have pulled off some of the wins they had earlier in the year, the wins that they had over Indianapolis, the win over Houston, which we forget how shocking that was when it happened, the way that they just beat the crap out of them. So, and the way that they stomped Chicago a couple weeks ago, a team that's a more legitimate playoff contender than they are. So, I like in this spot the Rams getting the 6.5.
I really want to, too. I'm not going to recommend it, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you. If you made me make a play, it's clearly the Rams, especially because that public money has put the number up, kind of reminiscent of a few weeks ago when the Saints were bet heavily as a road favorite against the Jets, lost that game outright. And the Saints do have some road woes, quite obviously. But here's the thing that I keep coming back to. This is a dome game still. I know it's not their dome, but it is a dome game. It seems when the Saints have to take their act outside is when they have problems. This is still an indoor game. St. Louis doesn't have the horses to keep up. I think the Saints are going to win here, but it will be a struggle. It will be a struggle.
I
really wanted to give out the
you.
Rams. This is one of several games, by the way, this week, where the public money is all in on the road favorite. And this is kind of one of them that I'm actually not going fully against the public. I think from here on out, every other game where the public is heavy on a road favorite, I'm going against them for the most part.
I'm surprised this is one of those games where that is the case. I mean, I know New Orleans is probably a pretty big public team this year, but that still kind of surprises me. Well, a team that certainly has to be a public team as well, a team that's number one presently in the FDH Lounge Power Rankings, which you can find, of course, every week, same place as the show, the FDH Lounge Multimedia Magazine, the FDHLounge.blogspot.com. The Seattle Seahawks, they are 11-2. They are going to MetLife Stadium for what is probably, one would say, the first of two times during this season here. New York Giants. Yeah, it might be back in February. Clip and save on that one. I know you called it well before I did. But Seattle's laying 7 in this one. It's been a pretty steady 7 throughout the week. So it's a little bit of a head fake in terms of the schedule, Kyle, because I told you I'm on a bunch of road favorites this week, but this is another one where I'm not. A little bit of, again, potentially a letdown spot for Seattle. Certainly not a recommended pick of mine, especially since the Giants have nothing to play for at this point. But under the circumstances, and that Seattle secondary is a little bit banged up against a fairly deep Giant receiving core, I like the Giants to hang close enough. Again, if they win, it's not the most shocking thing in the world to me because they're more talented than their record. But I like the Giants getting the 7 at home. I think Seattle's return to the Meadowlands would be much more fruitful than this one, potentially.
And see, I'm interested in by this the way this show's going, because I'm not recommending this home dog either. And I got to be honest with you, it's real tempting to do so. Seattle's awful loss. They really are in the driver's seat for that home field advantage. They've got two home games left, which, given what we've seen over the last 2 years with Russell Wilson, they're going to win. So, I mean, if they were going to lose another game, it actually would be here. But I keep coming to the fact that I know the Giants weren't as bad as their 0-6 record said they were at the time, but they have not beaten really any good quarterbacks this year. I talked about this last week when I stepped out against them and took San Diego, but the quarterbacks they beat during that little run they had in the middle of this season were just terrible. You know, Matt Barkley started for the Eagles, Scott Tolzien, the game Josh Freeman started for the Vikings was in there, Terrell Pryor, and then they beat, you know, a real downtrodden Redskins team as well. They probably are going to keep it close, but I'm not going against my Seahawks. And by the way, I don't know if you know this. I actually jumped on this bandwagon last year. You may want to tell, you know there. Yeah.
Not your, true.
I don't know. I heard there were some people within the FDH circles that, you know, that weren't aware that I was on the Seattle bandwagon. I don't know.
Well, Raymond Smalley, a good old Platinum Smalls, has noted how much you love putting yourself over for being first on them. But, you were first, and you were. You had them as the number one team in your power rankings right about at the end of last season, which was pretty ballsy with Russell Wilson still being a rookie quarterback. But aside from a brief defensive letdown in Atlanta there at the very end, who knows? It might have played out exactly the way that you thought it would. This next game here is very interesting.
Say,
it does not have – yeah, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to say one thing. Last week's loss meant really nothing. That was a game the 49ers clearly needed more than the Seahawks did. And the Seahawks actually covered the spread, albeit barely. So that loss really did nothing. And Seattle's still number one in my power rankings as well.
Okay, yeah, I think we can agree on that. For as tough as San Francisco is, losing in that building, splitting with the 49ers, that's pretty much what you would have expected at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
This next one here, Tom Brenneman and Brian Billick and the lovely Tamara Oakman coming to my hometown of Cleveland, Ohio. It's the 7-6 Bears at the 4-9 Browns. Notwithstanding the record, the Browns laying 1.5 in this one up from a pick'em at the start. Jay Cutler will be going for the Bears. This is one where, again, I toyed with playing this one as recommended to one of my big three plays, but I didn't, just because, again, I'm on the Bears in this one. I like the 1.5. Based on how the Browns played, I mean, yeah, they might be up for a letdown after what happened and getting jobbed by the officials last week against New England, but they just scare me. I refer to these penis-punching teams that can kind of, you know, steal something here through their defense. I mean, you know, if the Browns ended up getting like a late field goal to win like 16-15 or some such crap, you know, then I would look dumb. So I'm on the Bears, but again, the Browns fit the profile of the kind of team that would make me not be too firm on the Bears, if you know what I mean.
I'm not playing this one. The line was kind of late to come out. They were kind of hanging around waiting for the Bears quarterback status. Doesn't this line stink, though?
It does. It's
like,
weird.
Like, aren't most people going to look at this line and say the Browns are favored? I mean, I know it's, you know, by the slightest of margins, but that's going to shock most people. And the Bears off a big Monday night win. I'm not sure that going back to Cutler is going to be this huge upgrade that people think it is. I thought McCown was, you know, certainly Monday night, was playing just as well. And this could be a real trap game for the Bears. Cleveland is due to win at least one more game this year. They play tough. You know, they really, you said it, and, you know, I like to poke a lot of fun at the Browns. They got jobbed last week pretty bad. It was quite unfortunate what happened against the Patriots. And this is, I believe, their home finale. So
it is.
They may just, you know, they may dust themselves off and steal one here and pretty much wreck the Bears' playoff chances. So I wouldn't be surprised either if that happened, but I'm laying off.
That would be a very Cleveland Browns thing to do, pretty much assuring ourselves of not being able to get a top-flight quarterback in the draft without a big trade by self-destructively winning
something?
One of these last three games. Go ahead.
Let me say something here, because I know our good friend Jason Jones is ready to descend
yes.
in draft mode here shortly.
Our senior editor,
I think this quarterback crop that's coming up is overrated. And I don't think the Cleveland Browns should pick a quarterback in the first round.
It's starting to look that way.
I just, like, you know, I watch a great deal of college football, and other than Bridgewater, who's going to be gone with the first pick anyway, probably to Houston, I wouldn't take any of these. I wouldn't want any of these guys to be my starter. It's going to be out, Johnny Football or any of these other guys. Johnny Football's too small, I think. I mean, I know Russell Wilson gives everyone hope now, but, you know, Russell Wilson's got a lot of intangible qualities that make him an outlier, similar to Drew Brees. So,
yeah.
You know, I would wait. I think next year's crop is going to be better with Jameis Winston.
It may very well be. Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point, and I think a lot of people are coming to that conclusion as well. A massive battle here in the AFC South that we thought at the beginning of the year would have playoff implications attached to it, but we see now clearly will not. The Indianapolis Colts at home laying 5.5 to Houston, had been 6 at the open here. As I joke to you off here, Houston, the best 2-11 team in the history of sports. I mean, not that that gets you anything, and that's going to sound like a hollow justification for the team I picked to go to the Super Bowl, but this is just one of those years where everything goes wrong. They're going to bounce back, be a strong team next year. A potential letdown spot here for Indianapolis coming off of that bad effort against Cincinnati. I clearly have been overrating Indianapolis in the last couple
yes,
of weeks.
Yeah.
Not really. Yeah, I have, and that's, there's a danger in when you go too far the other way, and I've done this a couple times on my picks in recent years, so I might be getting off their bandwagon at just the wrong time, but I don't think so. I'm going to take Houston getting the 5.5 here.
Ring the bell, my second recommended play of the week. It's the Houston Texans. All the Colts do is get outgained every game, and oh, by
yeah.
the way, they have a negative point differential again this year.
Mm-hmm.
I've said it now. Look, I have this team. Where do you have the Colts in your power ranking? Then I'll tell you where I have them in mind.
I'm going to need a second to pull that up here. But go ahead while and talk about them while I'm doing it.
Okay. I've said it once. I'll say it a million times. Other than Andrew Luck, there's not a single thing I like about this team at all.
Okay.
And because I'm me, I'm going to be the one who says this. God bless Chuck Pagano and everything he's gone through. But when do we get to start asking, is this guy a good head coach or not? Because
it was
Bruce Arians that led this team to the playoffs last year. It's Bruce Arians that's turned around the Arizona Cardinals this year. Chuck Pagano, to me, some of his strategies, some of the things he says after the game, lead me to believe that the Colts may have gotten stuck with the wrong coach.
That's true.
And
I know it might make me
a mean-spirited sounding guy, but he has not proven to me that he's a better head coach than Bruce Arians was last year. And I'm recommending Houston plus the points here. I think the Colts have been outgained now in three or four straight weeks. That game was not as close last week as, you know, the even lopsided final suggests. All the Colts points came in garbage time when they're down by three touchdowns. And, you know, you can tell me where you have them in your power rankings. I'll tell you now, it's 19th.
Wow. Okay, I got them 11. I've bumped them off my top tier for the first time in a while. I got them
on the second tier.
I still got them 11. I mean, they are 8-5, Kyle, and they have some quality wins on their resume.
They have a lot of bad losses, too. They are the most high-variance team in the league, I'll say this. I mean, yeah, I mean, you
New York
I guess
Jets
you
say hi.
I think the Colts are even more.
Really?
I think the Colts are even more high-variance. They have some just ugly losses this year. I do not like this team, and I think they're one and done. I think Houston, by the way, you talk about them coming back. I think Houston could win the division next year over Indianapolis. You heard it here first.
Yeah, with the right quarterback, possibly. Next up, two very ugly teams. We surely can't have much to say about this one. 4-9 Buffalo at 4-9 Jacksonville. Bills laying 2 on the road. I like the Bills. I know Manuel has been kind of ugly as a quarterback on the road here. I think Jacksonville a little overvalued at this point with their vaunted 4 out of 5 wins, Gaga, that they got going on right here. I'll take the Bills where I think that you can buy them at a more affordable price.
Yeah, no interest whatsoever in this game, Ricky. Very little to say, although I will say one thing. When Jacksonville had 0 wins there for a while, I was looking real dumb because I went back and saw I picked them for 6 before the year. So it's nice that they've gone on a little mini win streak and I won't wind up being too far off at the end. But no interest in this game. I mean, Jacksonville certainly got the momentum, but you kind of feel the Bills should probably win one before the end of the year, and you figure if they're going to, it would be here. So
you would tend to think so, yeah. You know, that would probably be the case. But, yeah, this is a battle that nobody will be paying attention to. Down the coast in Florida, something that will be just the opposite. Nansen Sims, the A-team for CBS, is going to be on this one. It's the 10-3 Patriots at the 7-6 Dolphins. No real drama left here for the AFC East Championship. That will go for the umpteenth year in a row to the Patriots, but the Dolphins still struggling against all odds to make it into the playoffs and having a decent chance to do so. Dolphins are getting 1 in this one, down from 2.5 at the open. The Patriots have kind of stumbled a couple times in recent weeks since that big win over Denver. And you look at the second half against Denver, it was really good, but they haven't really had a great half of football in the other 5 halves of football that they've played recently here. Kind of a strange one, but I like the Dolphins in a game that they really need. I like them getting the 1 at home.
I love where your head's at, and I wish I could follow you, but I'm not recommending this one either. I think this is surprising. Well, maybe it's not surprising because, you know, how you just laid it out there, the Patriots have really not played particularly well, despite what their record indicates. In the first half, really. Last week in Cleveland, they stunk. They also, going back a few weeks, stunk against Miami in the first half when they first met. The Dolphins had that big lead and blew it. I just think that this is the one home dog that I'm totally staying away from and I'm passing on this game. I can't even give a mild recommendation on the Dolphins because I don't think they're as good as their record either. So
okay.
And this is also one of the road favorites that is not getting a ton of public money. The Patriots, I mean, the majority of the money's on them, but it's not as much as some of the other ones. So, again, that indicates that kind of cools me. I'm a home dog.
Okay. Well, we got a very interesting one coming up next year in terms of another high-variance team and a team playing one of the best seasons of anybody out there, a 9-4 Carolina Panthers. They are hosting the 6-7 high-variance New York Jets. And in this one, Carolina is laying 11, down from 12 at the open. This is one where, again, I go back and forth on this. You never know which Jets team is going to show up. The biggest factor in my head, I know it's a sandwich game for Carolina. It's one of the reasons I'm not on them as a recommended pick this week. But Geno Smith on the road against that defense, no thank you. I'll take Carolina laying the 11.
Yeah, and it scares me, Ricky. It really does. The Jets are a very high variance team. You know, they're coming off a double-digit cover at home, albeit against Oakland. And teams that come off double-digit covers as home favorites typically don't do so well in that following week. But this is a lot of points to play with. Number one, double-digit dogs have cashed around 63-64% this year. I took San Diego earlier, and I'm going to take the Jets here, too, as a recommended play against my better wisdom. It's five dimes, by the way. You can grab them at 12.5 if you're interested. Not that they're paying me to tell anyone to do that. But here's what you hit on it. This is a really tricky spot for Carolina in between the two New Orleans games. They're clearly disappointed after what happened last Sunday night. They're clearly going to be pointing to the rematch. And remember that bad record that Newton and Rivera have in games decided by 7 points or less? This might be one of those games that improves that record, but that's a straight-up record, keep in mind. Carolina wins this one closer than the experts think. Give me the Jets and the points for my third recommended play this week.
Very interesting. All right, six games to go here. We move next to the A-team for Fox, Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, and the delicious Pam Oliver. They will be at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. It's the 7-6 Cowboys hosting the 6-6-1 Packers, still apparently to be without Aaron Rodgers this week. Dallas is laying 7 in this one. It's a game where the Packers are out to avenge their loss in the 1996 NFC Championship game. Dallas, of course, in that game, avenging their loss in the Ice Bowl from 1967. So the circle of life continues here. Teams seeking vengeance on one another, as though it was the Hatfields and the McCoys. You like my historical drop there, Kyle?
Yeah, and those are the only two times, people, that those teams have played, that these teams have played over the last 40 years, keep in mind, or 50 years, remember. They've never played since before or after those games. Give me a break.
Keep in mind, those are the only two times anybody can remember, okay?
Yeah. By the way, that 7-point line you gave out, that just came out today, and I think it's only one book. So by the time you listen to this, who knows where this number could be. I'll say this. I just saw the number before we went on air. I had really – this is a game, despite the fact that Fox is setting its A-team, as you mentioned, I have very little interest in. I would probably take the points if pressed to, but it's not a recommended play, just because Green Bay is working on a pretty bad ATS skid here. So they're due to cover a game. Dallas, that defense, I don't want to lay 7 points with that group at all.
The defense is horrible, but I think they can cover Matt Flynn. And, yeah, I'll take Dallas to cover this one.
Wow.
We move to the Sunday nighter. Yeah, but I know that you had talked about the total being of some interest here. It's Cincinnati at Pittsburgh. The Bengals are laying 2 on the road. They have been 2.5 at the open. I like the Bengals in a game where really between the two, only they have something to play for at this point. They showed earlier this season that they can handle the Steelers, albeit that was when the Steelers were at a lower ebb than they are now. But I'll take the Bengals to cover the 2 on the road in this one. And, again, I know you had some interesting thoughts here versus the total.
Yeah, I'll say this as far as the side goes. I've seen some support in sharp circles on the Steelers. I can't endorse it, though. Their season, for all intents and purposes, ended last week with a heartbreaker at home to Miami. But with the total, I'm going to recommend a total here. I don't do that very often on the show. I think the last one I did, it was a Monday night game, Green Bay-Chicago, and that one went over. And I'm calling for this game to go over as well. Last week, this is what I wanted to hit on, a record amount of scoring took place. I believe it was 859 total points were scored in the 16 games.
Man.
And over that, playing favorites are typically associated with, you know, what we kind of jokingly refer to as squares. I'll tell you what, I had read some stuff prior to last week about how the bookmakers have simply just not adjusted for the amount of scoring that's taking place this year in the NFL. And I'm telling you what, folks, more often than not, you want to look to go over on most of these games. Especially if you can get a number as low as this one. I think it's 40.5. Cincinnati scored 42 by themselves last week. Pittsburgh scored 30-something. The average NFL game this year sees and this was going into last week, about around 46 total points. That would be an all-time high for the history of the league. And you know that number went up after last week. So I think there's some good value on the over in this game. I think you know, that total is kind of associated with the AFC North that we all used to know and love, but that's just not the way these teams play anymore.
Very good points there. That takes us to our Monday night game, and the last of which before my big three plays for the week. Something that could be a styles clash on a par with perhaps Jerry Lawler, Roddy Piper, Kick of the Ring, 1994. We speak, of course, of the 7-6 Ravens and the 7-6 Lions. Yeah, well, that's just the kind of thing I think of when I look at this team. One kind of dome, finesse, spread it out kind of team versus the Ravens, who still kind of have that blood and guts identity. You don't know in terms of work rate, Kyle, how their styles are going to mesh together here in this one. But the Lions are laying 5.5 down from 6 at the open. They both need it. They are both still at least on the periphery of the playoff races in their respective conferences. I'm going to go with Detroit to cover this one at home here. I do think that, again, they're going to be at just about – I think more or less full strength offensively, and I think it's just too many weapons for Baltimore to keep up with.
You know what? I wasn't going to do this until I was just listening to you. I hope you have a piece of paper handy during the show, because I've recommended a lot of plays.
Okay.
And I still have more to come. I'm putting a rare chalk play for me on the program here. I like Detroit to smash Baltimore. Baltimore, like Indianapolis, is a team I just don't think is very good. I was on Minnesota in a game where the win probability chart read like a lie detector test. I read someone last week. Fortunately, Minnesota was covering bell to bell and really not in danger of being a losing ticket last Sunday. But wow, was that a wild finish. And it was sort of just indicative of Baltimore's season, just kind of grinding out a close win. I think they're due to get their doors blown off. And Detroit's due for a big win, too. You know, kind of a real unfortunate circumstance last week, getting stuck in that blizzard in Philadelphia. They were not expecting that. Matt Stafford appeared never to have seen snow in his life in the first half. So I think back in their dome, they air it out, and they just really lay it to the Ravens here. The Lions have to have this game. They cannot – if they do not win this division to make the playoffs, Jim Schwartz has got to go.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's all set up right there for them to be able to take it. And, again, and I understand what I'm saying about Detroit being at full strength. You don't know with Reggie Bush, whatever, but they don't lose a whole lot going to the old Joikster there as the backup. I mean, it's not really much of a drop-off if it ends up being him in there. So I'm not oblivious to the notion that that might happen. I just kind of discount that makes much of a difference at all to Baltimore in terms of defensing them, if it does. We move to the big three picks for the week here. First up, and they all three games feature road favorites. Which way is road favorite Ricky going to go on these ones? Lots of suspense.
Oh, my goodness.
We start with the 8-5 Cardinals at the 5-8 Titans. I'd like to be able to say, Kyle, anyways, that I have cherry-picked, I think, the best. Well, some of these road favorites are going to cover this week. I mean, I understand that the sharps don't ever want to believe that, but some of them are. And, look, have I identified them? I don't know. But these, to me, are the highest probability ones. The Cardinals in this one here, they're only laying 2.5 on the road, down from 3 at the open. You've taught me to be a little bit wary of short favorites in a spot like this, and it's kind of making me think about it a little bit here. But again, my regard for Tennessee at this point is at a pretty low ebb. And I just think, again, the Cardinals have proven in recent weeks, maybe not so much at Philly, although they gave a good effort there, but they've proven they can go and win one on the road. They did that at Jacksonville when the Jaguars were just starting to get things turned around here. I think it'll be a similar spot. I like Arizona to blow past the 2.5 they're laying.
All right, I'll go quickly. Of the three teams I assume you're taking here with these last three games, this is the one that I would agree with the most. Tennessee with Ryan Fitzpatrick is just going against this defense. No, thank you. So believe it or not, the public is not too heavy on Arizona either, which actually makes me like them a little more, as you
okay.
know. So of the three teams I believe you're going to take here with your big three, this is the one I endorse the most. I'm actually going to go against the other two. Spoiler alert.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, we were going to a clash on these last two. First up, it's the 8-5 Eagles at the 3-9-1 Vikings in a game at the stadium formerly known as the Triple H Metrodome. The Eagles are laying 4.5 in this one. And again, I'm on the Eagles in this with how they've looked in recent weeks. The Vikings without Adrian Peterson, I don't know. Maybe this is the ultimate sucker spot, but give me Philadelphia to roll, roll, roll.
Minnesota's played much better the last couple weeks. And I'll be honest with you, there was no drop-off last week going from Adrian Peterson to Toby Gerhart. I'm not afraid. I think the Vikings, kind of like some of these other teams, like the Browns I mentioned earlier, are due to still win one. And the Eagles are just kind of due to lose a game here. They've been playing remarkably well. They won three straight at home, finally curing their home woes. And as you recall, fondly, I'm sure, I was kind of jokingly saying for much of the year, what, are the Eagles going to lose every home game? Well, I'm going to come back at you with another rhetorical question, Ricky. What, are they going to win every road game? Give me the Vikings this week, plus the points. I think they shock the Eagles and make the NFC East all the more interesting.
I said it earlier. I salute you. You will go on the ugly teams that the rest of us shy away from. I'll give you that one. By the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't point out four-time lounge guest Kenny Albert on the call on this one, along with Moose Johnston and Tony Siracusa. We come now to my 1,000-star gold-plated lock of the millennium for NFL Week 15. It's the 10-3 Kansas City Chiefs at the 4-9 Raiders. Big AFC West rivalry here. Kansas City laying 4.5 up from 3.5 previously. You know, I was on Arizona for one of my big three last week. They came through for me. I'm on them again. Ditto with Kansas City, and they were even my lock pick against Washington. I know you said off air you see some differences in the spots between them, and, yeah, I'll grant you, Oakland is not as down and out as the Redskins are right about now. But the Chiefs, I think they're getting their mojo back a little bit. The Chiefs have been a team that, this just in, 10-1 in games this year when they're not playing the Denver Broncos. I'll take the Chiefs to roll on the road.
I like that stat, but I don't know if you heard me laughing there a little bit.
Okay.
There is no game more indicative of being a 1,000-star lock of the week for road favorite Ricky than this one. The public money is at just an unbelievable point on the Chiefs in this game. I mean, it's almost at 95%. So allow me to join the other two people in America who may be Dennis Allen's parents and take the Oakland Raiders. Betting is – I'm just going to say this. And if you're right, I'll tip my cap to you because it's a much more logical pick by you. Here's what I'm going to counter with. Betting is just not supposed to be that easy. It just
okay.
isn't. I mean, who wouldn't take Kansas City in this spot? And judging from the public money, which is well over 90% on them, not many people wouldn't. So I just don't think betting is supposed to be that easy. Kansas City, I think this is going to be a flat spot for them. They've got what is really their only meaningful regular season game left on the docket next week at home against Indianapolis, a possible wild card preview in that one. They're pretty much locked into the 5 seed. The Raiders, like the Vikings before them, I think are just due to pull a fast one on somebody. And believe it or not, I am giving out the silver and black this week, despite the fact that they really have no good players.
Well, what I said about Minnesota holds here. You know, you have the guts to give those ones out, and I do applaud that. My big three for this week, again, Arizona, Philadelphia, and Kansas City as my lock. Your recommended picks for the week, Houston, Minnesota, the Jets, Oaktown, Detroit, and the over in Cincinnati and Pittsburgh on Sunday night here. So should be very, very interesting to see how these play out, Kyle.
And I have San Diego.
And San Diego. All right.
Yeah, and San
That's
Diego.
Right.
If we could tweet that. I know we don't have a lot of time, but we could tweet that out there. I like San Diego. Yeah, San Diego, Houston. Yeah, I think you got them all. I think there's 7 there. Is there 7 there?
Yes. Yes, yes.
Okay, we got them all then.
This is the week. This is the week you push over 500 and profitability, blow past 500, right, the profitability, and make this a strong investment year as always. So, Kyle, Thank you so much, my friend. This has been a lot of fun to blow through, and looking forward to week 16 next week as well. Thank you, buddy.
And I am not a gay porn star.
No, you're not.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.